once believed that when someone dies, a crow carries their soul to the land of the dead. But sometimes, just sometimes, the crow can bring that soul back to put the wrong things right. There's nothing you can ever say. Nothing you can ever do.
This is Z from I Open Podcast.
I'm from Movie Spoilers Podcast. And we're doing The Crow here today, which I gotta say, I'm glad that won in the poll.
Yeah, if you didn't see, it was on moviespoilerspodcast.com, The Crow and Equilibrium.
Yes, Equilibrium lost by 2, a total of 19 votes, which we want to thank all those votes that came in, because we kind of did that in a... The polls will usually go on longer, but we had to record this earlier than usual, whatever. So, you know, it'll be on longer. But, hey, those votes came in pretty goddamn quickly once they saw Crow and Equilibrium. Two cool classics.
I just kind of wonder if people know what Equilibrium was.
You know what? I feel like no one knew what Equilibrium was in theaters, but I think it has, like, a DVD cult following.
That's true, because I don't think it... Did it have a theater release?
It did, and I don't know if... I don't think it stayed in theaters that long, because I remember it was in and out when it came out, if I recall.
Because I remember, I think I saw it on DVD.
Yeah, a bunch of buddies showed me on a DVD, and I was just like, this is badass, and I was laughing and having a good time in order, so I was just like, wow, this is... And then when I saw it, I actually bought it, and then the day I bought it came on Netflix stream. I said, ain't that a bitch?
Don't you hate when that happens?
Yeah. I just out of nowhere it just happened, whatever. But I'm glad the Crow won. I've always wanted to review this film, whatever. It has one of the, and I'm still saying today, this movie came out in 94, I believe, right?
Yes.
Best soundtrack ever to be whatever. I love this fucking soundtrack.
It's a good soundtrack. I mean, good movie, good stars. It's a classic.
And it pains me to hear that they're making a remake of it. It really does. It pains me.
Well, they've been talking about a remake for Crow for years.
Years now. I remember Bradley Cooper's name came up first.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that's been in. I think Tom Hiddleston, who played Loki, yeah.
I think Luke Evans is it? I think he's been cast now.
It's official. He is casted.
And after watching this movie, I gotta say, it worries me because... The Crow, even as good as it was kind of cartoonish. I think it followed the comic book pretty well. Actually, I think the movie is better than the book or whatever, but I thought the scenes had it was a kind of a cartoonish comic book feel to it or whatever. And I feel like with this remake, they're going to lose all that and go for the blood and guts and the they're going to go more serious toned with it and everything instead of having fun with it like they did in this film. And
were you a fan of the comic?
Yeah, I am or whatever. I mean, I don't like it as much, whatever, as I read it religiously as I would any other comic, whatever. But I thought it was good. When I saw the movie, I was like, wow, this is even better than the book, honestly.
Was it a comic book or a graphic novel?
It was a graphic novel.
Was it? Okay, so Sin City-ish type thing.
Yeah, and I want to say at the time I always thought that at this time when I first saw it, cause I saw The Crow and I was young and loved it or whatever. I was young as hell, whatever. My grandma popped it on for me or whatever. And I gotta say this, I thought at the time because I was reading comic books, I thought he was a better Batman and Punisher.
That's the kind of thing I was thinking of when I was watching this.
Yeah,
was Punisher.
Yeah, he's kind of a crossbreed between the Batman and Punisher, and I was just like, wow, I love watching this more than I love reading a Batman or Punisher comic. So I was like, oh, this is awesome. That probably that comment I just made probably wouldn't hold up today. The whole Nolan trilogy Batman and all the other books that came out now, whatever, but you know, hey.
But
then
okay, here's a question. Even though this movie's great and we know the movie was dropped by I believe it was Paramount? No. Who dropped the movie? It was Paramount. They dropped it when Brandon Lee died, and then Miramax picked it up.
Yeah, because I want to say he died after or during the filming of this?
It was during, I believe.
I think they had just finished it when they did. I can't remember, to be honest.
Well, they did a lot of. They had. This was the end of the scene. This like the last of the movies, but they still had like a stand-in during some parts where you don't see his face. That's a stand-in of Lee.
Because I know the movie ends with it says for Brandon and Eliza.
Yeah, and I don't know who Eliza is.
I'd imagine, yeah, I don't know who Eliza is, honestly, to be honest, too, or whatever. So I'd imagine maybe we know who Brandon is, or maybe Eliza is someone else that worked on the film, and they both passed away at the time, whatever. Because it seems like that they dedicated the movie towards Brandon Lee, which, by all means, hey, Brandon Lee, if you wait a way to go out, if you gotta go out on
Yeah, but my question was, do you think this movie would have been a big of a hit if he never died? Because this is the same thing with Dark Knight with Heath Ledger.
Yeah, I think it would have. You know, I think it would have been another equilibrium. I think it
Okay.
would have. I think it wouldn't have probably did as well. Oh, I don't know if it did well in the theaters, to be honest, whatever. But and plus, it got like the nominations at awards and stuff like that, whatever. So I mean, I don't think even though there were like Saturn Awards and stuff like that, I don't think it probably wouldn't have been as big of a hit as it was at the time when it came out. But I bet by now it would be like, hey, have you ever seen that movie, The Crow? I bet it'd be talked about more than it is now.
What movie?
The Crow.
Oh yeah, it made 144 million worldwide
Damn, that's impressive right there.
on a $23 million budget.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, the budget. You know what? And the feel of it is very comic booky feel. I imagine this is where Sin City got their tricks from or whatever, because they're just like, wow, this is the start of every movie we see today almost that are like cult hits.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the budget, there's like Ernie Hudson was probably the biggest star due to Ghostbusters.
At the time, whatever, he was pretty big.
Yeah, Brandon Lee was really, he's more known for his father, Bruce Lee. He was had some small roles and stuff, nothing, I don't think major. And then you had Tony Todd, which was Candyman.
I think John Polito at the time, the guy that played Gideon, who owned the pawn shop, I think he had some movie stuff under his credit too as well. I don't think he was as big as the two you just named, but he was probably like the third one after them.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no one that really stands out. Michael Wincott is, in my opinion, a freaking badass villain in everything he does.
I love this dude, whatever. Like his voice, perfect.
I know, was he's Southern, right?
He's just perfect, whatever. I love the scene. This is another reason why you cannot remake this movie, whatever. The characters in here are one of a kind. I'm sorry. Skank, best character ever.
I like T-Bird.
Fire it up! Fire it
I like T-Bird and Tintin.
Tintin, oh, the token black man.
Yeah.
I like Fun Boy and Skank.
It's like Ellie said, all the characters are great.
Yeah.
I loved Ernie Hudson.
Ernie Hudson was pretty good in the movie,
It's
whatever.
like
And
he had more screen time in this than he had in both Ghostbusters combined.
that is true, whatever. He actually did, whatever. And 1 hour and 42 minutes, whatever. I feel like I got so much story and background in this movie, whatever. I mean, it gets right to the point right away, whatever. We get to the death scene. We get to the. I mean, you want to go ahead and jump into the plot here, or.
Yeah, sure.
You know what? Before you get into the plot, I do want to bring up one thing, which we've talked about in each one of these Throwback Tuesdays now, is the fucking soundtrack. I have to get on that. I've been a fan of this soundtrack for almost, I mean, since I heard the damn movie. When I heard the song is my favorite one off the album is "Burn" by The Cure. I play that song religiously, like, almost every day now.
So you own the soundtrack?
I own the soundtrack, yeah, so whatever, and I freaking love. I had the disc and everything, whatever. Like when it came out, the disc and everything. So I love the soundtrack, and the music fits the movie so well in here.
It is. I love the ending credit song, which I want to use for this episode, which I gotta try to find it, but I love that. So depressing, because this movie is depressing.
It's very depressing, especially when they stop they add that music, whatever. Da, da, na, da, na, da, da. Whenever he's talking to the little girl or anything like that, Sarah, I believe.
Yeah, I mean the music is so it fits every scene it's in. How often do you see that in a movie?
Even the music. music that there's two scenes where Brandon Lee as Eric Draven, his character, whatever, he's on the rooftop playing his guitar or whatever. I was like, man, I love those songs even too.
Yeah.
Like music they've incorporated not only in the soundtrack, but they've incorporated in the movie is awesome.
It's the score is perfect. This is like one of the most perfect soundtracks for a movie of all time. Now this is going right along with Inception.
I was gonna say that, whatever. Like, the Inception to me is probably one of the best scores I've heard, or whatever. And The Crow has the best soundtrack I've ever heard, in my opinion. So,
And I'm kind of curious how they're gonna how what you said with the reboot. Because they did the sequels to this. I'd like the third sequel.
You know what? I did too. I was gonna say the second one was pretty bad, or whatever. And the third one, I thought they introduced some pretty cool concepts into it.
And the fourth one I never seen, but I'm not a fan of Edward Furlong, so I don't really want to see him as the crow.
I didn't see the fourth one either, for the simple fact that I was just like, they're ruining my childhood with these movies.
Yeah. But I did like the third one. I really did.
I need to rewatch that one. I only seen the one time, and I remember just liking some ideas of it, but I don't remember if I remember liking the whole film as a one or as I did this one.
And Kirsten Dunst was in it. And I think that was before Bring It On.
Yeah, I would say that was before she was the star we know her as today. Mary Jane. No, I'm just playing.
Well, is she really a star right now? No. She's not. Depends if for what part, but not for a star.
Damn.
Not for a star. Not for a star.
Damn, she is that bad then, whatever. When even any director would be like, no.
No, not for a star. Not for a star.
Wow. Well, alrighty then.
All right, well, the movie starts off on October 30th in the annual Devil's Night crime spree. And did you know this
Okay.
movie took place in Detroit? Or takes place in
Yes, and
Detroit?
I was just about to say that this place made Gotham City, this place made Batman look like, damn, this city's fucked up.
It really, I mean, I don't think it was shot in Detroit, but it really made Detroit look horrible.
This city looked like a shithole, even though Detroit looks like that now, but you know, still.
Yeah, but it makes it look horrible. It looks like you don't see, it looks like it's like the projects of Detroit.
And I love how cops are all over the place, but yet they never do anything. It's like these guys, we got four guys that murdered and killed two people with their evidence all over it, whatever, and yet nobody booked them, took them in. It's not like they're hard to find. You know, they all go to the same rundown bar down the street or whatever. They hang out there. I mean, they do drugs on the street. We got a pawn shop that pretty much deals in the handlings of it. Nobody does anything, whatever. So this is damn near worse than Gotham and any other city I've ever been to.
Well,
What?
Devil's Night's just pretty much an all-out crime spree, and
Yeah,
it's the
it's
day
pretty much
before
like the
Halloween.
Purge. It's a better version of the Purge. It's just it crime and pretty much setting fires to anything and everything.
Meet up with Sergeant Albrecht, who's played by Ernie Hudson. He's at a scene where we find out that two characters are dead. One, Shelley, who's been violated, raped, killed,
She was
stabbed,
beaten, raped, and
beaten.
stabbed to death.
And her boyfriend, Eric Draven, played by Brandon Lee, has been shot, stabbed, and thrown out a window, like a six-story window, wasn't it?
Yeah, as soon as he walks in the door, when he goes, Shelly, and then next, you know, a knife just comes swarming at him. I was like, damn.
Yeah.
That
So
was my 10-10.
then you find out that the couple's gonna be married the next day on Halloween.
She's in the wedding dress and everything. It's funny how much detail you get in this one little scene that happens for a couple of seconds.
How awesome is that?
I know, it was just that was the awesomeness of filmmaking back in '94, though.
Yes, this is before like overtelling a story.
Yeah, and
They kept
CG
it
and everything,
simple.
whatever.
So now Shelley dies at the hospital, and we meet Sarah, who is a friend.
She's more of a, I guess she was a friend of them, or whatever, but she said in the movie or whatever that they took care of her, or whatever. Because her mother in the movie was played by Anna Levine. She's Darla in the movie. She's kind of a junkie. And did you? She kind of looks like a God, what's that chick's name? I'm trying to think of the chick's name from the chick from Charlie's Angels. What's her name?
Cameron Diaz?
No, the other one, the bigger one.
Drew Barrymore?
Drew Barrymore, yeah. She kind of looked like her a little bit at times. I was just like, damn, I know that's not Drew Barrymore.
Sarah?
Yeah, no, Darla.
Oh, Darla?
Her mom.
Really?
Yeah. There's a scene where she's in the
No.
bathroom, or whatever, and I looked at it, I was like, wow, she kind of looks like Drew Barrymore
She
back
looked
then.
like more Cheryl Fenn to me.
Yeah, I can see that
You know,
too.
'cause she had that birthmark by her eye.
Can I tell you something? I'm not gonna lie, I was kind of looking at her titties and kind of comparing them to Drew Barrymore that way.
Ah!
I'm not gonna lie to you.
And there's the TPO we all know.
And then I just looked up at her face and said, "Oh, Drew Barrymore,
Yeah.
how you doing, darling?" Because African people, we use drums to communicate, and all I saw was two drums there, so I was,
Hey, this could have been Drew Barrymore. I mean, she was 94. She was nuts. She was just going, she was crazy at the time.
the character who played Darla was Anna Levine, and she was Sarah's mother or whatever. But she was a druggie and fucking fun boy or whatever, and hung out at the bar all the time. So she, I guess, Sarah was hanging around Eric Draven and what's that
Shelly.
chick's name? Shelly.
Shelly.
I guess just friends and someone to go to, I guess, because she was alone. So.
Yeah, then a year passes, and Sarah visits the graves and leaves flowers, and the crow comes down and lands on the headstone of Eric and starts tapping it.
How amazing is it that you don't have to explain it? Because I rewatched the movie yesterday, and I looked at it and was just like, wow, they didn't explain anything of how this crow brought this person back to life, but yet it doesn't bother me at all in the movie.
It actually does bother me a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems very voodooish.
Well, you know what? They do set that up in the film as far as with the villain and his sister. Because
Yeah, quote, sister.
His sister, yeah, quote, who played is played Mika. She talks about spiritualism and voodooism all throughout the whole goddamn movie, honestly, or whatever. Everything she quotes is something with it. So, I mean, they set something up, whatever, but they don't go into great detail about it. So, I can see where you have a problem with it.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of want to know because it's kind of very supernatural.
I know they go into the comic book about it, or whatever. I just don't remember actually what it, I haven't read that book until the
I mean,
movie.
I never knew crows were that spiritual.
You know what? In black families, they are. I'm gonna tell you this right now. When I was younger, I think this is why my grandma used made me watch this movie or whatever. She used to tell me shit about the crows or whatever, like they watch over the dead. And I was like, I tell you what, if you go to a ghetto black area or whatever, and they see crows, or I guarantee they'll say something about
Interesting. That's actually very interesting.
it. Yeah, I was talking to another black dude the other day, or whatever. Ghettoest nigga ever. A crow passed by us and he said, "Oh shit!" And I was looking at him. I was just like, I didn't say anything. I was just looking at him for a long. And I was just like, "Go ahead and say it. Go ahead. I'm about to say it." So Brandon Lee made this movie for black people.
Yeah. Even though there's two black people in the movie.
And one dies, another gets shot.
Yeah. But later that night, Eric wakes up and breaks out of his grave, having convulsions and freaking out.
And the
Just
crow kind of guides him to the places he needs to go, whatever, because he points to the boots he puts on, points him back to his old place, whatever, points to this or whatever. And I was like, wow, the crow is kind of like, his guidance, his eyes.
it kind of remind he kind of reminded me of like a pirate because the crow was on his shoulder like a parrot.
Every time he's on his shoulder, they always showed like a silhouette of him and walking in slow motion. I was just. You should have heard me in the background, or just singing that Burn song. Every night I fall. I was like, I don't care. It don't have to have no meaning. It's cool.
Yeah. So we get back. Eric goes back to his old apartment and he pretty much relives everything that happened that
Yeah,
night
because
he got
everything
murdered.
he touches, he pretty much just gets memories of him and everything, which I was just like, how fucked up that's got to
Well,
be.
here's two things. One, the cat's still alive. How's the cat still alive a year after the fact? And there's
Because
still police tape. Nothing's
you know what? I was
fixed.
gonna say that too when I saw it yesterday, the police tape and the fact that all this stuff is still in here or whatever. But then again, I looked at the building and said I looked at that building and said, I don't think they gave a fuck, honestly.
Yeah.
The building was like pretty much boarded up and shit like that. But I was like, I don't think anyone lives in this building
Well, you think
anymore. And
somebody
I
would
got
have ransacked it, robbed it?
and I gotta say this right now. I don't think they would have robbed photos, but then again, I was looking at that, saying that no one lived in that building. I don't think anyone lived in that whole goddamn block.
That's possible.
I don't think anybody lived in this city at all besides criminals.
That's very possible.
Because did you see the street? Because they did shot like some scenes of the streets and shit and over, and you just like I never not once saw a normal person just walking.
Yeah, it's true. That's
Only the only
very
person I
true.
saw in the movie was the guy that Skank robbed his car.
Yeah.
That was the only normal person in the whole movie, whatever. Goddamn Ford cars. That character was awesome, dude. Skank had me laughing throughout the whole end of the film. I was just like, this
Yeah.
motherfucker.
That was good. They were good characters. That's where we
Oh, man,
meet
I love Skank. I
during the
love that.
flashbacks, we find out who the killers are. It's T-Bird, Tintin, Funboy, and Skank, who's a group of criminals, I guess you would say.
Yeah, who works for a higher-end boss, whatever, who started the whole Devil's Night thing, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, so they're criminals and everything. And, I like the whole touching of the aspect and having those memories, whatever, because there's a thing in here called 30 Hours of Pain. That's actually, I remember this in the book, whatever. 30 Hours of Pain was actually introduced a little longer in the book, whatever. And I thought that was, like, one of the best concepts of the whole movie, honestly. Like that he could just transfer his pain away to the next person, whatever. I was just like, and it tells a whole story of all the pain he's been through to kill that person. I was just like, that is some badass stuff right there. I love that.
Yeah, so well then Eric swings out the window, trying to relive his death. And he has shards of glass in his
Yeah.
hands, and it kind of regenerates and glows. So pretty
Then he
much saying he's
realizes.
immortal.
Yeah. Then he realizes I'm Superman.
I
He
would say
became
he's
a
more
tool.
Wolverine.
Yeah, that's true, whatever. But I thought Wolverine was kind of a pussy, so,
Yeah.
Martin Lee ain't no pussy, And then this is where that song kicks in or whatever, and he puts on the makeup or whatever, and cuz it mimics the mask that his future wife was gonna well, used to have, whatever. Like one of those drama masks.
Yeah. It's creep it's how it's it was creepy how they did it. He just picks it up and he picks up the mask and you see a flashback and then all of a sudden he starts, painting his face.
He starts breaking shit. He punches the mirror or whatever, and then he just and that song kicks in, burn or whatever. Every night I burn.
Well, I know
I
what
hear that
song
line.
where I'm gonna be a editing into the podcast.
You're gonna be hearing that a lot actually in this review, whatever. Every night I burn, because I love that song. And you hear that kick in, and then next you know it. He just starts putting the makeup on. Then he goes to the trunk and puts the black long shirt on or whatever. And he just comes out in silhouette, and then that's when that crow is standing on his shoulder, and he just starts walking to the window, or whatever. And then we get the scene with Tintin,
In Gideon's pawn shop,
yeah, Gideon's pawn shop,
which
whatever.
I didn't like. I did not like this that Eric can see what the crow sees.
That's why I said like the crow is kind of his like his eyes to see or whatever. Like the crow is his way of looking at things or whatever and stuff. So like the crow's his guide. That's why if the crow was to be killed, he would then die or whatever. So it's like the crow is him in a way.
Yeah, but
You didn't like that though?
I didn't know. I didn't. It seemed
I kind of
very.
like
It
that
seemed
actually.
very sci-fi-ish. It seemed like the crow was pretty much directing him to everything. Like you said, he's the guidance. Like
Yeah.
he's like the crow is like his master.
I like that actually. I like the crow is like a the crow is the essence of him still, whatever. And if whatever essence, because his body obviously isn't human anymore, so it's dead. There's even a scene where the girl Sarah, she's like, I can't be friends with dead people anymore, and I kind of like that, whatever. And then they show like every now and then they show a scene of the crow's eyes to his eyes, whatever. And I don't know, I like the touch they had for that, whatever.
I mean, it's interesting, but I just thought it was very, they went really went way out of the box on that one.
Yeah. Well, they
But
had to set up something for this crow. This crow just couldn't be following him, bro. They had to set up something. That's what I felt, whatever. I felt like they had to have something with this crow. They didn't give no story to it, so they was like, we gotta show this crow doing something. He just can't be on his goddamn shoulder like a pirate all damn day.
Yeah. Then we get to a cool fight scene with Tintin and Draven, or I would just call him Draven.
Tintin is a crazy motherfucker. He licks his blade out and just going.
I love that he goes, he never misses, throws two, he just dodges. And the third one, Draven catches
Catches.
it with his hand. And that was so freaking cool.
And he just throws that shit at him, whatever. And then he takes his blood and makes a crow symbol out of it on the wall, or whatever. And Ernie Hudson's like, his. I don't know why his the detective is being a dick, or whatever. Ernie Hudson, whatever. He's
That's
just.
it's in every cop movie, the detectives are always kind of like a prick to the beat cops.
And they kind of set it up where it was saying that Ernie Hudson was digging too deep into the what happened between the deaths of those two, and he pretty much got in, because I think Ernie Hudson was at his level, and they told him to back off of it, and he didn't, and then so they bumped him down to the rank he's at now, whatever. And I think that's why the cops don't really arrest nobody, whatever, because I think they're afraid of this gang, to be honest.
What kind of bugged me, like later on, the detective finds out, stuff that Hudson's been doing, and he goes, "You're suspended." I'm like, "Can a detective just like suspend someone like that? Is he the captain? What is that?"
Detective has a lot of power over a B level. I don't even think Ernie Hudson was a B level cop, honestly. He was just running, supposed to be working in that one area, whatever, that cop called the hood.
But yeah, you said Tintin gets killed.
The crow is made out of blood on the wall, whatever, and the cop asks him, "What's that?" And he's like, "It's blood."
I
Like,
loved Draven's quote. He says, "Victims, aren't we all?"
victim. Aren't we all?
I swear, I love this movie, man. I love it. It's cartoonish as it can be, or whatever. I was just like, this is right up. This is probably one of the best
That's
adaptations of a book I've seen.
where I got the Punisher feel to it when he did the calling card of
Yeah.
the he did it for the blood, he did it for the flames, I believe, when T-Bird gets killed.
Just like Batman did in Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, why? I mean, I didn't really like that because Punisher came out like I want to say about 6 years before this, the original.
Oh,
So
okay, yeah. I was just talking about the Thomas Jane one, but
no, and I don't know. I just think it was kind of overdone.
in this movie or The Punisher?
This
You know,
that
that was
seemed
one of
like
the.
he was a superhero and he's not.
Yeah, well, you know what? He did tell the pawn shop, whatever, to tell him. He's like, "Hey, let him know I'm coming." And so, you know, I guess that's his way of saying, "Hey, this is my mark here," or whatever. It's not so much that he was a superhero, more of a vigilante of justice.
He goes to Gideon's. He
That's why I said he was more of a Batman kind. Batman's not really necessarily a superhero. He's a vigilante, you know, so.
He goes to Gideon's. Gideon shoots him in the chest and just it just heals.
Just regenerates or whatever.
Then he finds then he like he goes through like all these rings to find Shelley's engagement ring, and he finally found it.
Makes a freaking crow mark on Tintin's body out of his knives or whatever, and then he tells him, he says, "Before Tintin passed away, he told me he sold you an engagement ring here." So then he finds that ring, whatever, and then I love this line, whatever. He's talking about, he's like, you, Gideon's like, you go find them, you messing with some fucked up people, they're gonna murder you." And then Draven turns around and says, "Is that gasoline I smell?"
Walk out of here. They're gonna erase your sorry ass. You're nothing but street grease here. Street grease, you motherfucker.
Is that gasoline I smell?
No, man.
No! No! No!
Yeah, that he shoots the that he pours the rings into the barrel of the gun first.
Fires them at
Which I didn't I was, Gideon was a fat motherfucker. How the fuck did he make it out of that building?
I'm gonna tell you this right now. I don't think he made it out. I think he got blown out
Okay.
because his legs lifted off the ground when the door came apart or whatever. He just flew against the wall or whatever. So.
But okay, so then we get a flashback of Fun Boy, what he did with Shelly, so obviously he's next. He looks like he's going in order.
One boy and a skank, I love them because they're retarded. You can tell them, "One boy, I got something in my pocket I want to show you." I was like, "What the fuck?" That's a doped out version of P1, right?
Well, then you meet then Air then Draven meets Sergeant Albrecht at an explosion at Gideon's.
Yeah, the one he said or whatever, and then he pretty much tells him, "Hey, don't move, or I'll put some shoes on." He's like, "I thought cops usually say freeze."
He goes, yeah. He goes, well, he goes, I'll move and I'll shoot. And he goes, or what would he say?
He said, "I'm moving. You'll move. You move, and I'll put a hole in you." He's like, "Well, I'm moving, and I don't see you shooting, or whatever." And then some people, like, I love it. As soon as like this place blows up, people just start looting this fucking place right away. It wasn't even a good minute this place blowing up, and already people was in there looting that shit or whatever. And then Ernie Hudson turns around, and then he does a Batman, he disappears.
Yeah, and obviously Draven knows who the cop is.
Yeah,
the cop doesn't know who he is.
I think he had some kind of, really, because, he goes back to the station and does more, because Draven tells him about Shelly. That's
yeah.
why he's going around telling me, he's telling, you remember Shelly, whatever, and stuff like that. And so he brings her up to him, and Ernie Hudson goes back to the police station, digging in files that he probably shouldn't have been digging in, according to the female cop that helped him out, whatever. And he starts putting, face paint over the picture of Eric Draven's character in the movie, and I was like, wow, that looks just like him with that face.
Before the explosion at the pawn shop, did you like that Sarah is friends with Ernie Hudson's character?
Oh, when they were at the hot dog scene?
Yeah, or do you think he's just taking care of her because he felt bad for what happened?
I think they have a mutual understanding with it, because Ernie Hudson's friends with those two, Sarah was friends with those two, and then for Sarah to come back and find them that dead or whatever, or not Shelly, she wasn't dead, but Ernie Hudson was at the hospital with her when she died or whatever, and I imagine Sarah was there as well, so I mean, I think he did feel bad for her in a way or whatever, knowing that her mom is a junkie and all that shit or whatever, so... I mean, I felt bad for that girl, honestly. I was just like, Jesus Christ. She's pretty much taking care of herself.
Yeah, and then we meet, then Sarah's on her skateboard and almost gets hit by a car. Draven, Eric saves her, and then he pretty much gets, as soon as he touched her, he gets flashback to who she was.
Yeah, her hanging out with Shelly and stuff like that, and he has one of his little mental breakdown moments or whatever. And then he quotes a line from one of his albums or whatever, and she automatically knows who it is right away. And then we get to...
Yeah, he says it can't rain all the time.
Yeah, and then we get to the fun part here. What fun, boy?
This is the scene that he died. In real life, this is where Brandon Lee died.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that or whatever. But, yeah, I love this scene too, whatever. It's hilarious, whatever, because the crow just swarms into the window and fucking... The fucking fun boy then doped up Darla with all kinds of heroin in her arm, or whatever. And then next thing she's like, "It's a fucking bird over there." He turns around and says, "Hey, birdie, birdie." And then fucking Eric Draven, he's just sitting in the window smiling, just looking at him like, "What an idiot."
He's like, "Here, fun boy, fun boy."
He's like, "Here, fun." And then fun boy looks up and says, "What the fuck are you doing, man?" He's giggling while he's. I'm just like, man, he is on the ultimate high right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Then he puts a gun to Eric's hand and shoots it, and Eric pretends he got shot. He's hurting, which I love that part.
Yeah, because if you look closer, whatever, he screams, but when he turns around, he starts smiling. And he looks back at him, and he just turns around smiling. His hand just heals up, and he just go like, "Kind of fucking circus clown are you, man?"
Yeah, that was great.
Well, play well. He played a great Shaggy for Scooby Doo.
Yeah, he took a year off after this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because that's because he was pretty much the reason why he died. Well, he wasn't the reason, but he caused his death. But, yeah, he took a year off of acting.
Wow,
after
I didn't
this.
Know that too. Good lord!
Yeah,
a lot of fun facts behind this film that I didn't know about.
Yeah.
But yeah, he pretty much shoots Fun Boy in the leg, whatever, and then. I love as he's dragging him to the bathroom. Darla runs to the bathroom. I love as he's dragging him to the bathroom. All you hear is gibberish coming out of Funboy's mouth. Like, yeah, yeah. I was like, what the fuck's wrong?
It's probably normal talk for him.
I was like, damn, is he Jack Sparrow right now? What the fuck is he talking about? Don't kill me, man. Don't kill. And then this is where Draven pretty much tells Darla, look at yourself in the mirror or whatever and shit. And, he pretty much wakes her ass up there, like, you got a daughter out there on the street, whatever. Get your ass home with her and go take care of her. I'm going to have some fun here with Fun Boy. she run downstairs, whatever, the black guy that's like the leader or the main henchman for the villain here, he pretty much runs upstairs, and then we see fucking Draven about to stab syringes right into Fun Boy's heart, making a goddamn crow symbol on his chest.
Yeah, well, he also took Darla's hand and pretty much took all the drugs out.
Yeah, exactly. He did some mystical, magical Negro shit here.
Yeah, that's why he just feels very voodoo-ish to me.
Well, you know, in the book they do set up that or whatever, and they do set this up in here or whatever, so it does follow some voodoo formats here and here or whatever, but not so much necessarily voodoo. Voodoo is more chanting and incantations or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's more mystical than it is voodooism.
Yeah. Yeah, What was I gonna say? Yeah, you see, it's Grange. His name's Grange. Tony Todd's the
Wow, that dude
henchman.
got old, man.
He still looks good now, to this day. He's
Man,
got
he
that
looks.
creepy. He's got the creepiest voice. It's like Keith David voice.
He
It
looks like
stands
Martin
out.
Clark Duncan a little bit.
Ooh, good. That's
I mean,
not. That's not. That's a good one.
like,
Alive. Alive.
yeah,
Sorry,
I lied.
Michael Clark Duncan.
Oh, yeah, because I remember I took a picture with a Michael Clark Duncan, so I was just like, oh, wait, that wasn't the real one, so never mind. But we get to the scene where pretty much the black guy, he's like, they get back to the main villain, whatever, with the pawn shop guy, whatever, and he's like, I saw a fucking dude just wink at me as he jumped out the window and vanished, whatever, and shit. And the main villain, he's just laughing, he's just like, jumped out of the window laughing, huh? And this is where they set up pretty much that the sister and the brother, the villains or whatever, they're fucking.
Yeah, they well, you saw a scene earlier when you first meet them that they had a girl in bed, and
With the
looks like they had
biggest
a
titties ever.
they had like a three-way. And
Biggest titties ever, too.
she goes, "I like her eyes." And then obviously we find out that she took the eyes from the girl.
Yeah, because she says that the eyes are spiritualistic, and I think that's where they set up with that whole crow thing, whatever, as far as her. I'm sorry, her sister was. I mean, his sister was, or quote unquote sister, was creepy as fuck in this movie. I love how the pawn shop dude, whatever, Gideon, he's just like, you two are related? What kind of sick fucks are you?
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah.
when he came into this place, like, all of this was new to him.
You know who the actress was?
John Polito.
No, the sister.
Oh no, I don't know who that is actually.
Bai Ling.
I've never seen her anywhere else.
She was she's been in like a numerous other stuff, stuff like Anna McKing. Shaolin Soccer. Remember that movie? How stupid that movie was.
Yeah, she's been in a bunch of shit that I either don't like or haven't seen, so yeah.
Yeah, she was in
You know,
Star
she was in Crank.
Wars.
She was in Crank, the sequel.
Crank 2?
Yeah. Wow, I didn't know that. All right, then. So, yeah, maybe I did. I do remember her now, whatever. Oh, whatever. So, yeah,
Yeah.
so, but I love how Gideon just, like, looks at, like, him and his sister, and he's just, like, this is all new to him. He's never seen no shit like this or whatever. She's playing with her eyes and shit, rolling around the table, and he's giving her kisses on the hood, and he's just looking at them like, the fuck are you two into? This is where Gideon dies, by the way, too.
Yeah, he gets stabbed by a with a sword right in the throat, and then he gets
Yeah.
shot because he wasn't dying quick enough, I guess.
It's like as soon as he stabs him in the throat, he's just like, well, you're fucking dire. I was like, well, damn, you just stabbed him. But he takes a gun and just fucking shoots like three bullets in his chest or whatever. I was like, man.
The thing, this is before Funboy died, but Gideon told, or T-Bird told, his name is Top Dollar, which I never heard him say that name in the movie.
I think I heard it once in the beginning towards the film, whatever.
They tell him that Tintin's dead, and he was stabbed in all his vital organs alphabetically. I'm like, that was never brought up in the movie.
What, that Tintin died?
No, that his he was stabbed alphabetically in all the major organs.
Yeah, it was.
Who's I know T-Bird says it, but the cops never say it. How would they know?
I think he was joking around. I don't think you taking that like it was. I don't think he was like, oh, he was stabbed. I think he was just fucking around, whatever and shit. Like he was saying, he wasn't saying that like it to be like a real analysis or whatever. Damn, you trying to make this shit deep? The fuck? You taking this movie way too serious
I'm sorry.
now. Lord, did I not set this up saying this is some cartoonish thrill or whatever shit going on? You talking about like, yeah, is this alphabetical or how do you know it's alphabetical or whatever?
I don't even
What?
think CSI could figure that.
Wow, white people, I swear. Jesus Christ.
I'm sorry for my race.
Good Lord, all right.
Well, yeah, I love Top Dollar. I love Michael Wincott. He's got the voice. He's got the such a creepy voice.
Especially the parts where he's talking to Skank or whatever. I love those scenes, whatever. He's just like, everybody looks at Skank as a joke, whatever. But to move it along here, we get to the part where now where he sends fucking Skank in, T-Bird sends Skank in to go get some smokes and beers, whatever, and then next you know it, he gets in the car, and then right behind him is Eric Draven. Draven tells him to drive off or whatever. Skank follows him in a Ford Fiesta.
That was so funny.
I'm telling you, when Skank is introduced, this is the part where Skank is introduced now, like, the rest of the movie just becomes comedy because Skank is fucking hilarious in the movie. He's following T-Bird, and he's making these kind of noises, and he's like,
This, if you think about it, this was kind of like a comedic scene because the cops see T-Bird flying down, and he goes, what the fuck? Or he goes, what the? He says something like, what the? Something stupid.
He
like,
says, holy crap.
Yeah, and then he drives, and the other cop gets his coffee spilled on him. And
he's like, and the whole time Skank is driving, he, oh, fucking dead end. And then when he hits a trash can, he's like, goddamn foreign cars. And then next you know, the cop cars hit Skank or whatever. They run into each other, and Skank falls off the car, and he's chasing them on foot now, limping and shit. Mm-hmm. As you see, like, T-Bird going, I know who you are, but he's like, that can't be you, man, because there ain't no coming back from the dead. Fucking, he's tied, he's taping him to the seat or whatever and setting his ass to explode or whatever and putting his foot on the gas pedal. He just drives off, and the next another car, all you see is a Skank hitting the corner going, T-Bird. And then you see the car just blow up before he even hits the water, and then next you know it, Eric Draven throws a lighter out and hit the little crow symbol, leave out here.
Yeah. And yeah. That was a cool scene, and that pretty much T-Bird was the leader, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was the leader of the four or whatever, and it was funny how Skank was the one that lived. He was the weakest. He was the weakest out of the four.
He was. He doesn't look threatening at all.
He looks like a retarded crackhead.
He did. He did.
And then so we get to the scene where I'm sorry, I was laughing hard at the scene. T-Bird, Skank is trying to explain it to the Top Dollar Michael Wincott character or whatever. He's like, T-Bird sends me in the store to go get some road beers, right? And then they start, this goddamn ghost steals the car, and then he drives off. And I'm like, T-Bird, fire it up. I was like, and then the Michael Wincott said, man, we should have just recorded this and played this shit in slow motion. And then Skank, he's just like, man, T-Bird, this one's for you. And he just takes a sip, and then he starts yelling again or whatever. And then
Fire it up.
I love this character. Nobody can replace that character. If they remake Skank, I'm already giving that movie a fuck it then if it ain't Skank that I see, because that character with me was hilarious. This is where the black guy also says, yeah, I checked out the grave. It turned out empty or whatever and shit like that, right? And then you hear Skank go, grave? What about my motherfucking grave? That goddamn ghost coming from me. And then the black dude pushes him and says, sit your ass down.
Skank was an interesting character. He actually brought some comedic. Since this is such a dark movie, he brought some comedic feel to
whenever
it.
Skank is on screen, and then I love it the whole time. Skank is sitting in a chair because the Michael Wincott and his sister, they leave the room. And he's like, keep an eye on him, or our good friend Skank here, whatever. And then Skank he just starts making noises, going, grave, what about my grave? I was like, what does he keep making them noises for, or whatever?
Yeah, it's because he's probably high as fuck. But
that probably is a good point.
Yeah, we go back to like Eric's apartment. He's burning all the photos of him, and Sarah shows up and says something, you know, stalk him because he disappears. And, talking about, and she keeps calling for him, and he doesn't answer, and she gets pissed. And then that's where the silhouette, you don't see his face, that was a stand-in of Brandon Lee.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, I researched this a little bit.
Yeah, then that music kicked in.
Yeah, and then he says that they can't be friends because he's dead, but he still cares for her and take care of the cat.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, you can't... Think it's gonna be just normalized like it was before or whatever? Come on now, this man's taking bullet holes to him, whatever, without feeling anything. So I mean, come on now.
Yeah, and then we get to the Devil's Night business meeting. I guess you want to say.
I love this meeting, whatever, because the black dude pulls out Skank. And he's like, well, our good friend T-Bird couldn't make it here because he's dead. So, Skank, you want to have a seat? He's like,
he's like, and then Michael Wincott gives this whole speech or whatever about Devil's Night, how he wants to make it big and be remembered because they're selling goddamn greeting cards for Devil's Night. They didn't turn it into a fucking holiday now, or whatever. And he doesn't like that too much. He's like, we need to be known again, or whatever. And then he just, I love this scene. He just looks at Skank and he's like, I want the gods to know us and know who I are. And then he looks at Skank. He's like, you, Skank. How do you feel? And he's like, I feel like a fucking worm on a big ass hook. Goddamn. And then Michael Wincott looked at him and shook his head and said, you feel like a worm on a big ass fucking hook. Damn, your mama must be proud.
Hey, you! Huh? What's your name? Skank! You don't feel that?
I feel like a little worm on a big fucking hook. I feel like a little worm on a big fucking hook. Well, boy, your mama must be damn proud of you.
Michael Wincott, he is great, and Skank was great. I mean, this was a cool scene. You got more development with character development in this scene with Top Dollar.
I don't know if Michael Wincott was supposed to be laughing in this scene where he told Skank that or not, but you could just see on his look on his face that he's like, man, I'm having fun here. Now this is hilarious. He just shook his head and was just like, wow. And then the crow shows up, the actual bird, whatever, and then Eric Draven just comes out of there nowhere and just pretty much says, I only want him or whatever. And then Michael Wincott, I was like, well, you can't have him.
I just want him.
Well, you can't have him.
Yeah, he sits on the table Indian style, like all proper.
Yeah.
And just, does he have the guitar around him?
No, he doesn't have the guitar with him, or he just came by himself, whatever, without anything, whatever. No guns on him or anything. He just came just unarmed and everything. I mean, when you're a walking invisible tank or whatever, why not, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and Top Dollar says he's bored, and he tells all the guys to shoot him.
Yeah, and then next thing he's like, that looked like it hurt. Yeah. Michael Wincott's so charismatic in here, whatever. It's just a great villain and great character all around in the whole film, whatever. And then next, you know, when one of the guy go look for him, whatever, he's like, he's not here. And then all you see is his body gets dragged under the table. And he's like, whoa. And Michael Wincott runs like hell with the black guy as the sister tries to grab the bird because I think her voodoo ass, she has an understanding of how it works now, I guess. So. And we get this cool action scene with this badass techno rock music playing in the background, whatever, of just Eric Draven murdering everybody in this damn room, whatever. And I love the scene where he stops in the dark, whatever, and he yells the gun and he just looks at everybody and says, you're all going to die tonight.
Mm-hmm. And this is the first vigilante thing that the Crow does, that he's, you know, his own goal was to kill the four guys, not these guys, but...
Well, to be, you know, in that way or whatever, they were in his way.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, he did walk in the room, and his first words he came out was said, I only want him, and the rest of you can go, whatever. I mean, you know, his goal was just those four guys, whatever. He never knew it was bigger than those four guys, whatever, with Michael Wincott's character as far as setting everything up in that point, whatever. And I imagine that's why his body didn't go back after he killed those four guys, because it's like, oh, no. Those four guys were just henchmen to the real guy that led this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and I love this scene because Skank is running. As soon as Skank sees Eric Draven coming, no, as soon as he sees the bird, he goes, And then when Eric Draven walks, he's like, it's that goddamn ghost. He's like, let me go. And then when they let him go, whatever, and Eric Draven is killing everybody in this room, whatever, Skank is just running behind people. He threw some girl in front of him. He's like, you're gonna kill me. Please save me.
Yeah, Top Dollar, Grange, and his sister leave. And
there's a scene before he kills Skank, though, where he grabs him. He's like, hello, Skank. And he's just like, hey, Skank. Skank dead.
Skank's right there.
I was like, are you serious? Did he really just try to play that off like Skank is some other person? Like somebody?
Especially talking to a guy that can see everything when he touches something.
and then he just looks at Skank and says, you're right, Skank is dead. He just throws him out the window and shit.
That was awesome. Lands on Ernie Hudson's car. No, it wasn't Ernie Hudson's car.
And he just says, God damn!
Yeah, because Hudson was suspended at the time before that.
So, we pretty much get to the scene where Eric Draven goes back to the grave, whatever, because he's pretty much thinking, you know, his job is done or whatever. He he can rest in peace now. He's got revenge for the murder or whatever. But he sees Sarah sitting there or whatever, and he's like, you can go home. I'm waiting here or whatever. I'm going to go back now, whatever, et cetera, et cetera. And you realize, like, you know, hey, what's up? I'm not going back yet, whatever. And then they know they kidnap Sarah and take her in the church that's right next to the cemetery. And they pretty much hold her. And then they, through the bird's eye, once again, he could see that they took Sarah, whatever, and heard him calling out Eric's name, whatever, and he goes running. And then next you know it, they shoot the bird.
Yeah, Grain shoots the crow, and he loses, and Draven loses immortality.
I would imagine he still has some of it left, because the bird didn't die, so he's more wounded than he is, more crippled than he is, pretty much finished or whatever, because motherfucker got shot and stabbed or whatever, and he was still moving, so I was like, yeah, the bird is still alive, so bird got hit right in the wing, whatever, so he's a crippled immortal.
Yeah, they go to the church, and, you know, they're bringing her up to the roof, and
then Ernie Hudson comes in and starts shooting. He blows a shot of that black dude with a shotgun.
Oh yeah, that was fucking awesome. It was so badass that you finally get Hudson's character something to do.
Yeah, because he just comes in out of nowhere and just all you see is like just the guns he was holding just like were just firing loud ass ranges. All he blew the dude away or whatever. And the next you know it, he's like, all right, here's the plan. You stand in front of me and take all the bullets, and then I'll arrest them all.
Yeah.
He's like, that would have been a good plan a couple of minutes ago, whatever. He's like, I thought you could heal and shit. He was like, I could. I can't anymore.
Then Mika grabs the wounded crow to take the power, which I don't know how she would do that, but
she's
whatever.
She's like that fucking African in District 9.
Everything goes back to District 9.
Yeah. Technically, this came first, so District 9 took this from that.
Yeah.
Just put black people in there and put them in Africa. It'd make more sense.
Yeah.
White people don't do voodoo. It's crazy.
Top Dollar ties Sarah up, and they climb the bell tower. Micah shoots Albrecht, and hurts
him. Yeah, she shoots him, and the crow eats her eyes out. How ironic was that?
That was awesome. And she falls a hell of a far.
Yeah, because I love how she lands by Ernie Hudson's body, and he just glows, damn.
he just kind of like a, what up, bitch?
he's like, I guess we even now. But, no, I like the scene where the crow, Eric Draven, was walking up the steps, and he was just looking at her with, like, this dark tone in his face, whatever, and as she was talking or whatever, the crow was, like, him and the crow was, like, connected at this point, whatever. Like, he convinced the crow to peck her eyes out.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. Like, you know, like, he's, you know, paying back the crow, you know, saving the crow's life for doing, you know, paying it back.
Yeah, exactly. So, like you said, she falls to her death, and then he goes up there, and I this was probably one of the best fight scenes in the movie for me or whatever. I really like this scene or whatever, because you got this guy, Michael Wincott, just talking shit through the whole fight. Talking about what his daddy told him and shit, whatever. And what I wanted to say is, did your daddy tell you he was going to die today? But, you know.
Yeah, then you find out that Top Dollar is the one that for the reasoning for Eric and Shelley's death.
You know, my daddy used to say, every man's got a devil, and you can't rest till you find him. What happened back there with you and your girlfriend? I cleared that building. Hell, nothing in this town happens without my say-so. So I'm sorry if I spoiled your wedding plans here, friend. But if it's any consolation to you, you have put a smile on my face. You got a lot of spirit, son. I am gonna miss you.
Yeah, because he pretty much tells them they don't make a move in this city, at least the criminals in the city don't make a move without me giving the word or whatever. So he was like, I am going to miss you, but I will say this. There was no hard feelings between what happened with your death or whatever, but he said, I will miss you because you made me smile or whatever. And then that's when Eric Draven grabs him and they do the 30 hours of pain thing or whatever, which I fucking love that sequence or whatever, where Eric Draven transfers all the pain he's felt in his life, whatever, over to him. And then you see, like, Michael Wincott's eyes just, like, rolling in the back of his head. And I'm just like, whoa.
Yeah, and then he pretty much falls on top of a gargoyle statue, and the blood comes out of the gargoyle's mouth, which is really cool.
much Eric Draven goes back to his grave and Shelley comes and puts him back to rest.
Yeah, and why did they get killed?
Who?
Shelley and Eric.
Because apparently they were doing some kind of eviction thing or whatever, and she was protesting against it, and you don't protest against, apparently, I think that's why the cops don't fuck with this gang or whatever, you don't protest against this gang or whatever, and she was doing that or whatever, and they came in, I guess they were going to teach her a lesson. Obviously, they were going to kill her either way, I mean, because mm-hmm. I remember what's that dude named,
T-Bird?
T-Bird, yeah, T-Bird was saying, like, oh, then her idiot boyfriend had to show up and fucked it up. I was like, y'all was going to kill her anyway, come on now. Rather he showed up or not, y'all was going to murder her, so.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of confusing why they went after her, but yeah, that's actually a good point, because I remember they had, like, a paper reading, like, a tenants thing.
Yeah,
so.
Processing. I don't think that was confusing, I caught it. That was the easiest thing to catch on in this movie.
Shut up.
What the fuck are you talking about? They show you a clear ass scene or whatever and everything. Even they even go over with the scene between Ernie Hudson and Eric Draven when they're in his house.
Yeah.
Somebody wasn't paying attention.
I was. Damn it. Somebody
didn't watch it again then or whatever. Because I just watched this yesterday or whatever.
I watched it yesterday.
Alright, you wasn't paying attention to that. And I was drinking.
When are you?
Everywhere or whatever. But yeah, so since Chad and Z doesn't pay attention to the films and shit, what am I opening here? Z doesn't pay attention to the films, whatever, his rating doesn't matter.
Oh, shut up.
He doesn't realize the best movie of 1994, probably of the 90s ever, whatever, which is The Crow.
Oh, wow. Wow.
We'll see it from me, because this is one of the best films of that decade, if you ask me. Yeah, because 89, actually 89 is pretty better, but, you know, I'm talking about the 90s, so.
96 was pretty good.
Yeah, fuck 96 compared to The Crow.
I mean, yes, The Crow is a great movie. It's a cult classic. I mean, everybody's had to have seen this movie. Even just for, I think it's legacy of Brandon Lee's, they've seen the movie. But yeah, I give it a bucket. It is well worth watching. It's enjoyable. Music's great. Scenery's great. The pacing of the movie's great. It's just an all around a great movie.
Yeah, I love the soundtrack in it. I love the acting in it. I love the characters they have in it. I like the characters, how they're over the top and everything. Everything, how they were, it just fits in this world or whatever. And I love that they took this world, something I thought they should have did in The Purge, and just go completely batshit crazy with it.
Yeah, I mean, I love the four criminals. You, like we said, Skank's probably the best. But I wanted, like, I thought Tintin was the most interesting one.
Tintin is the most interesting one because of the whole knife thing.
Yeah, I wanted to see more of him. That's kind of like, he only had that one scene, but T-Bird went out kind of like a bitch. I mean, the only one that actually put up a fight was Tintin.
And Skank tried to, he got away.
He got away.
He tried to put up a fight, tried to tell him that it wasn't him, but it was Tintin. He was dead already. That put up a fight, right?
Yeah, but this movie's definitely worth seeing. The sequel, the second one, City of Angels, is downright terrible.
Yeah, I was insulted. I ain't
gonna lie. Salvation, it actually kind of takes it back to the roots a little bit.
Yeah, it does have some scenes in there where it does.
I never seen, I believe, what was the next one called? Wicked Prayer.
I kind of got to a point where I just said, fuck all those other movies.
There is a TV series.
Oh my god.
Stairway to Heaven.
That shit was horrible.
Yo, you seen it?
I watched two episodes or whatever, and I was just like, you know what? No other Crow exists except for this one.
Yeah. I mean, but it's going to be kind of interesting to see how the remake's going to be. I'll definitely see the remake.
You know, I'll definitely see it, and yeah, I know they're going to fuck that movie up, whatever. Because this one is in its own rights, it's hokey and cartoonish and over-the-top fun and whatever, and I don't know how that would translate well to today. And I know they won't translate it the exact way. I'm pretty sure they're going to go for a more darker, serious tone like they do with every goddamn movie. They're going to go for a darker, serious tone, whatever, and it's going to be like, they've taken the fun out of it now, whatever, and now the shit that they're showing us don't make any damn sense, so.
Yeah, I mean, this is, was this an independent movie, really?
No, I don't think so.
No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't know. I thought maybe it could be because, well, back then, 23 million is pretty much top dollar
Yeah,
compared
I
to
was gonna say
today.
back then, you gotta remember 24 million back then is like a fucking Avengers budget right here.
It's true. But for what they worth, for not having pretty much any stars in it, it is a good movie, and I'm glad they could have ended the production after Lee's death. They could have just, canceled the film, but they
Yeah.
went along with it, which was,
Which I am glad about that too as well.
yeah, I mean, it's this movie's a legacy.
Told you it's cult following. It's one of the best of the 90s. My top five.
Yeah, I mean, this is a one of a kind movie that you only see maybe once a decade. I mean, it's well worth seeing.
So that's Throwback Tuesday, episode 3, The
Did
Crow.
we get any comments?
No, not this week or whatever, that I haven't seen actually or whatever, and I don't have my tablet up, so no comments this week, whatever, so.
All right, well, remember you can check out the podcast show on eelpodcast.com, which I have to get Husky to start putting the episodes up.
Yep, and you can check them out for now on moviespoilerspodcast.com. Every Tuesday they are uploaded or whatever. I'm your host, The Phenomenal One,
This is Z.
and I am signing out.
Later.
I hear pounding feet in the streets below, and the women cried, and the children know that there's something wrong. It's hard to believe that.